What are you smiling about, Sergeant?
I almost had you.
You almost had me? You never had me. You never had your squad. Standard deployment spread, not advancing like you should. You're lucky that 100-round boulder pack didn't blow the back off your gunner. Almost had me. Now the chaplain and I have to address the squad and rebuild the morale you broke. Ask any warrior, any real warrior. It doesn't matter if you win by an inch or a mile. Winning's winning. Welcome to the Objective Secured podcast. My name's Mike.
And I'm Emma.
And this is episode 14, Inches or Miles. And we're going to be talking today primarily around the theory of win at all costs or WAC.
Yeah, it's something that we hear, I guess, bandied around quite often. And the definition of WAC that we hear from players and our definition of WAC are quite different. So we wanted to just explore that a little bit today.
Yeah, there's a lot of it that gets thrown around, particularly around any of the major tournaments that happen around the world. And I think there's a few different ways you can approach it, and there's all sorts of different definitions for it. So it's a great opportunity, given Adepticon's just finished, and people have been analysing the top eight lists from the championship event, and there's been a lot of those whack comments circulating the message boards and Facebook. So good opportunity for us to have a chat about it. But before we do, why don't we have a quick chat about what's been going on with OBSEC here in Western Australia? If you didn't catch us on our Facebook live stream last Wednesday, we have, well, I suppose it's just over a week ago now, just come back from our annual Warhammer Camp trip to Albany.
Road trip down south.
Called Linebreaker, where we basically go down for two nights with a bunch of the Perth boys, meet up with a bunch of the Albany boys. I call them Albanians and I shouldn't.
They're not Albanians. They're from Albany.
And we play a bunch of Warhammer, we do a little tournament, and we all have a good laugh while we're there. So,
sadly, this year it was all boys. We didn't have any female players this year.
Yeah.
One, apparently, just because she's about to have a baby any day.
Look, she was 37 weeks pregnant. Give her some credit. And she did actually offer to play ringer at one point there, and then that offer quickly disappeared when she stood up for more than about 10 minutes and went, "Oh, it's not happening." So, hopefully, we'll have some other ladies join us for next year's trip. Where that trip is, who knows? We certainly aim to head towards Albany again. But if you want us to take the road trip somewhere else, you're more than welcome to get in touch and suggest a venue.
It does have to be within Western Australia.
It does. It does. Freighting a bunch of terrain and tables around the world is not logistically viable at the moment.
As exciting as that sounds.
Look, it'd be great, but I dread to think what the ticket price would have to be to justify it.
Not going to happen next year anyway.
Congratulations to our winners, though. We had one of the Perth locals, Matt Bell, take it out this year with Eldar. He's continuing the tradition of a Matt winning the event for the third year in a row now. Returning, or two-time winner Matt Davey, sadly couldn't be with us this year.
But he's still alive.
Yeah, he is still alive. He just moved to Adelaide, which is almost a death sentence. So we had a Matt winner again, third year in a row, which is awesome.
Yeah.
One of the locals, Mark, took out Best General with his Chaos Demons army. And then we had sportsmanship taken out by another Albany local with his Tyranids, John Gill. And then painting went to one of the Perth boys, Steve Moritz, with his Adeptus Mechanicus, with all the lights and sounds and spinning rotor cannons and all sorts of stuff. It was a very lights and sound tech show.
Very cool.
It was pretty cool. We tried to get some video, and hopefully we'll be able to get Saffa's army together so that we can share some love and some video footage of all the guns whirring and the lights going and the sound effects even. It was pretty amazing.
It's very cool, yeah.
Lovely weekend. Wasn't too cold, only a little bit of rain, and the the event went off pretty straightforward. So
yeah, it took a couple of days for some of the hangover wear off.
There was a god-awful bottle of green moonshine
around.
We'll call it. But a lot of those stories are best left in Albany. Most so we're going to move on. But thank you very much to the boys in Albany for making us welcome again this year. And we hope to see them at some of the Perth events later in the year.
Yeah.
We've also
that
had...
same weekend was Crags Age of Sigma event.
Yeah. The boys at Crags put on their first Age of Sigma for 2018. I think they
boys and girls at Crag. They have
Nikki.
At least one female.
She's on the committee.
Member.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They ran, I think it was 22 players or something. It was in the low 20s or the high teens. It was the final turnout, which is great because there's more Age of Sigma being played in Perth now, which is awesome.
Mm-hmm.
So congratulations to the boys down there and girls for putting on another successful event. I'm sure that the community appreciated that. And this coming weekend, we've also got the Easter long weekend, it is.
Yeah, Beyond Games and Hobbies have their doubles event this
week. It's a player. Unfortunately, due to another commitment, we can't make it down to this event.
We've got kids and it's Easter.
So. This year, but we're looking forward to the photos and some of the coverage from the guys down there. Jake and Matt did a fantastic job with their first 40K event at the start of the year, and they've run an Age of Sigma one since then as well. So... and the last one that we've got coming up, which I'm still trying to ignore because I've got to build and paint an army and get ready for a tournament, is...
Yeah, and how many boxes of terrain have we got to finish in the next 3 weeks?
Four, five.
Oh, beautiful.
No, not really. It's more like 2.5. is the West Australian Team Challenge, the WATC.
Yeah.
We've talked about this a couple of times now. You can find a bunch of videos and footage from last year's event. You can find the matchup process on our YouTube channel. And we've mentioned it in the live streams that we've been doing recently. And we'll do another one of those in about a week's time to cover any of the other questions. Teams of six, 1,500 points a player, no double-up codexes. So you can't have six players running Craft World Order. And we get together for four games in one day and we smash out a team event. So... I think the last time we would have mentioned this, we had 18 teams of six paid for, 108 players in Western Australia, which is absolutely jaw-dropping. And then we went out to the venue and had a chat to them, and we've...
done a bit of maths and a bit of...
I'll see if I can get a photo of the floor plan that Emma's been playing with in the background, but we actually have managed to squeeze in six more tables, which means we're going to have 120 40K players coming to play this event.
And I have worked out how we could potentially get another six tables in.
Don't take that, guy. No,
it's not financially viable for us to be able to. It would involve huge costs. So.
Oh, look, yeah, the venue itself, you guys are all going to be fairly cozy on the day. We've had to butt up a couple of tables and we've had to be very strict with the amount of walk room that you guys are going to have. But
oh, no, there's still adequate walk room. We've made sure that there's generous gaps between the tables.
I wouldn't say generous because we've got 60 tables worth in there.
It's more generous than some of the events that I've been to.
Yeah, that's true. But
you literally have to breathe in and walk sideways to get between tables.
But yeah, we're going to have... with the two tickets that we added, we have 120 40K players. It's the single biggest tournament by a considerable margin. I mean, we broke the WA record here for first blood, and then we've increased it by 50% a couple of months later, which is absolutely amazing. So we really have to thank the West Australian community for wanting to come along and play this event.
Yeah, and we just honestly could not do this without you guys and girls. And yeah, I feel really sappy when I think about it. Like the amount of support that we have from, look, we've worked out we can do this, but we've got a bit of a logistical issue with actually getting this stuff to the event, and the number of people that put their hand up and said, how can I help? How can we make this happen? It really is overwhelming.
Yeah, it's quite humbling to know that the community backs us the way you guys do. So we thank you and we really appreciate your support and all the commitment that you guys put in, out not just in getting your armies ready to come to the event, but the guys who turn up and set up and hang around and pack up. And there's going to be some guys who are bringing utes and trailers to help us move some of the extra materials that we need for this event, because
we've had to buy a whole heap of tables so that we can actually get this number of players in, because there just aren't enough tables
And hiring trestle tables for a single day is virtually impossible.
On a Sunday, it was $1,000 for delivery.
So
we've had to buy the trestle tables, but we had no way of getting them there. So people have just honestly...
Yeah, it's been really, really amazing.
Been flooded with support.
So we're going to try and get some live stream happening now. It'll all depend on how the bandwidth goes at the venue. And we'll do
it. Whether there's room for the camera.
Whether there's room for the camera. We'll do the best we can. We'll probably do some live stuff on Facebook. And anything we do get on camera, we'll probably put up on YouTube over the following couple of days.
Yeah.
Whether we can actually do it live, I don't know.
Do.
But it's going to be a massive day anyway. It's got to be right up there. Australia-wide is one of the biggest events.
Well, it's certainly the biggest team event that Australia's ever seen.
Certainly, I mean, the guys Overwatch Gaming in New South Wales just ran theirs. I think they ended up with 15 teams or 16 teams of four, which is awesome to see the East Coast getting another team event off and really successful. And then the Australian New Zealand Team Challenge, as it's known now. I think we've had eight teams of eight, I think is the best we've managed across the seven, 8 years it's been running.
Yeah.
So it's
64 players is
fantastic. Those sorts of size events are really, really good. But I've got to say that I'm really stoked and terrified that we're going to have 120 40K players in a room that's only about 400 square meters in about a month's time.
Yeah. But we're going to do everything we can to try and make this event the best one that you guys have ever been to. We are obviously, as always, welcome to spectators to come and check it out.
You're going to have to get cozy with the players, but...
Yeah, but, you know, as Mike said before, any photos that you take on the day, please make sure you tag OBSEC into it so that we can see, because I'm not 100% sure how much time I'm going to have to go around and get photos of the tables and that kind of thing.
The other cool thing for me, one of the reasons I really like this event, is because I actually get to play in it.
And so he does. Absolutely sweet.
I get to play. That's a lot of work. Everyone listening to this knows that's a lot of work.
Mm-hmm.
No, the WATC, because it's a team event, I don't feel there's any conflict of interest in me playing, because ultimately if the team wins, I'm one of six.
Yeah.
I always would feel very, very awkward if by some chance we ran an event that I was playing in and then I won it. Whereas at least with WATC, it's a team effort. You can't win it without the rest of the team doing well as well. So that's nice.
Yeah. And how many players in the room will be able to actually win for 3 years in a row?
Only three of us.
And you're all on the same team?
Yeah.
Right, so I know that Mike has a lot of hopes riding on that team winning.
Oh, look, I'd love to have the three medals back to back to back, but I'm really looking forward to having a tournament that's going to feel a lot. Hopefully, it's going to feel a lot like the ATCs that I've really enjoyed going to, but also a lot like LVO, where it's just packed and the noise in the room is going to be monumental, and it's going to be a full on bustling day, and everyone's going to be knackered at the end of it, but it should be a real spectacle to behold and be part of. So I'm really looking forward to that.
Actually, that's one of the things from Albany. It was a small event compared to what we normally run, but the noise and volume and the bustle and the experience and the atmosphere in the room, it equaled, if not, you know, overshadowed some of the other bigger events that we've run.
I mean, it's a small...
It does help that it's an echoey scale.
Yeah, it's a smaller venue, but...
Yeah,
look, I'm really looking forward to WATC. It's going to be... essentially, it's going to be a first of its kind here in WA, and at 120 players, it's going to be right up there for Australian tournaments. So I'm really, really keen to see it all come together and get to play. Emma's the TO for the day, so if you are listening to this, don't come and ask me questions.
Nope. Feel free to shoot your questions over to me.
And then she'll come and ask me.
No, so. We'll do no such thing. You're a player.
We're going to be, like I mentioned earlier, we're going to be on the live stream on Wednesday night. So
if you have questions, if you can shoot those through to us via Facebook, I'll put up a Q&A post later on. But if you can shoot any questions you have to us in advance, just so that we kind of got an idea around.
And if you're a player, you can always give them to your captains as well, because we do have the captain's council in the background now.
We do.
So
a secret group that everybody knows about.
Yep. But since you and I are the only two who've got veto rights for who gets in, it's pretty easy to say no. So... but no, look, I'm really, really excited. I've got a bunch of tower. I've got two models.
Actually, you're not a captain. You shouldn't be allowed in it.
Yeah, but because I have OBSEC privileges, I can't be stopped.
Damn.
speaking of tau, now we've had the book a week. I still haven't had a game with them. I did get a game mid last week with one of the WA locals, Alex Danaford.
Mm-hmm.
And that should be, by the time you're hearing this, should be on the YouTube channel as well. It's a little bit late because we've had some more audio issues and I still can't figure out what the problems are, but...
We are working through them.
We're getting better. It's getting easier, but it's frustrating at the same time. I do have a local who's offered to give us a little bit of a hand that I met at Genghis Con not long ago, and he's now a bit free to give us some help, so hopefully we can resolve some of those issues. And speaking of conventions, also this weekend is SwanCon that's happening in the city.
Mm-hmm.
Now, hopefully we'll be there on the Saturday, or at least I'll be there on the Saturday. Mm-hmm. So if you want to come and play some 40K or I'll probably bring X-Wing with me, and there's a couple of other games that might make the trip in. You're more than welcome to come and say hi. But yeah, SwanCon's been going a few years now, and they do role-playing games, and they've asked us to come along and do some tabletop, so that should be exciting as well.
Yeah.
But before we get stuck into the topic, let's take a quick break, and we'll be back to talk win at all costs or whack. So what does win at all costs actually mean? How do we get there? And why is it thrown around so much within the gaming community? Not just 40K, but you see it thrown around at a lot of the gaming communities. But it seems to crop up a lot in the Games Workshop games more than most.
I'm not sure if it crops up in the Games Workshop games more than most, or it's just that that's what we're exposed to more than most.
I don't know. I think before we get stuck into the actual topic, when you start talking about things like War Machine and Hordes, where there's certainly a very competitive mentality built into the game, you sort of go in with that mentality ready to play. And I mean, X-Wing still has an organized tournament structure and an organized play structure that is run by the company. So again, I think there's less complaining about a win-at-all-costs mentality, and it's more around overpowered units and choices as opposed to necessarily win-at-all-costs. And I've certainly never seen it mentioned in Bolt Action or Malifaux or any of those other sorts of smaller games, whereas it seems to be something that gets bandied around quite a bit when it comes to, certainly when it comes to Warhammer 40,000 and a little bit of Age of Sigmar, but the game's still a little bit in its infancy. So it's certainly something that I see more for Games Workshop games.
Yeah, no, I definitely heard win at all costs thrown around a lot at the last couple of Age of Sigmar tournaments that I've attended. So,
oh, okay.
Yeah.
Well, we've kind of had a chat about this, and we think we've got it nutted down.
Yeah.
Because we're always right.
Yeah, well, especially when we disagree with each other. One of us is right, maybe.
So the first part we want to talk about with WAC is what does it actually mean? So obviously, win at all costs sounds pretty straightforward, but I think people's definitions of that change depending on their perspectives.
Yeah, I definitely, when I hear win at all costs or whack thrown around, it's certainly not what my definition of whack would be.
Yeah, I always think when you say at all costs, it's no matter the cost. Is it another way of winning no matter what it costs? I don't care how I have to achieve the win, as long as I achieve the win.
My final outcome is to achieve the win, and I'll do anything and everything in order to get there.
So, you know, it's one that goes up to and certainly includes cheating. We'll talk about that a little bit shortly. But you see whack thrown around with tournament players. You see it thrown around with casual garage games. You see it thrown around on Facebook all the time with someone going, oh, I just played this at my local gaming store. Is it a whack list? Oh, it was definitely a whack list. And I think we need to kind of separate win at all costs as a mentality and win at all costs as a list.
Yeah, that's exactly what I was about to say. I'm not sure that a list, providing it's a legal list, I don't think a list can be win at all costs.
I think it can, but I think context matters because if you've met up with a buddy and you've agreed to do a cool, friendly narrative game recreating, I don't know, the siege of Craftworld Yarnden with the Tyranids, and the Yarnden player rocks up with nothing but Dark Reapers and what is obviously a very hyper competitive army when you're trying to create a narrative result, you're more concerned about winning the game than you are with recreating the narrative. So there's a disconnect there between what the expectations of the players are.
Yeah, see, I think that's a disconnect. I personally don't think that's win at all costs.
No, but
and
I could
think
see
it's also how you play that list.
But I could see the other player's perspective and go, well, you've built a list that you have built to win this game with, so at the cost of the narrative that we've derived.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's sort of the first kind of win at all costs, which people can often refer to. It's that disconnect between the social...
Breaching the social contract.
Contract, yeah. So is a list capable of being win at all costs? No. But is the I suppose the intent of writing that list in the context of the game you're going to play, can you break that social contract to...
Do you think that comes down to communication skills, though?
Yeah, it can do.
I think, you know, how outright do you think people are with saying, you know, no one's going to go, I'm creating a social contract with you, that this is a narrative event, and therefore my expectations with that are X, 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 Y, 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 Y. You know, no one's going to actually come out and say that, but by saying, hey, look, let's have a friendly, casual game, my experience of a friendly, casual game might be, you know what, I'm still going to bring a strong list.
Yeah.
I still want to win the game, but I'm going to do it while I'm having a casual beer and eating pizza and having a laugh with my friend. Whereas your expectation of the same thing might be, well, this is a narrative event and therefore I'm expecting that the lists are going to be here. So I think that you've actually, you can't say that that's then win at all costs because somebody's got a different interpretation of what you've suggested or what's been agreed upon.
Yeah, that's fair enough. I mean, we do an annual apocalypse game here. We've done it 3 or 4 years in a row now. And that social contract has always been, bring your big toys and blow stuff up.
Yeah.
The result of the actual winner of the game is often long forgotten by the time the first guns start firing.
Yeah, it really doesn't matter. It's all just about who blows up the biggest Titan first.
And the coolest way possible.
Yeah, and can you get the biggest explosion that blows up as much as possible? Yeah.
So in that context for our apocalypse games, it's never an issue because we all know we're just trying to be a bit crazy with it. So
yeah, but a good example of it is the First Blood event that we ran. So we promoted that as a friendly event that was a beginner event.
A hobby event as well.
A hobby event. So people then kind of had the idea that they weren't going to be facing stronger lists.
Yeah, and I think, again, you're right, that there were a few guys who were a little bit taken aback when they saw some of the armies because there is such a wide diversity of what constitutes a casual game. And there were certainly guys that built stronger armies that wanted to come along and try and win it.
Because most people don't go to a tournament without... Well, you know, there's a fair percentage of people that go to a tournament still hoping to win.
Yeah. I mean, a lot of guys will turn up to a tournament to play a bunch of games in a day or 2 days, and that's their end goal.
Winning it would still be nice.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think there's probably a third of the room that realistically wants to, like, go hard and actually try and win at any given event.
Yeah.
And
then there's some stronger players that attend that win some of our less hobby-focused events who know that they have got absolutely buckleys because they don't have the
hobby side of it,
for the hobby skill.
The hobby, like the painting and modelling side of it, is less important to them.
Yeah.
So can a list be win at all costs? Probably not. Even at a tournament, like if you talk about, let's talk about Adepticon that's just gone, the 2018 Adepticon.
Mm-hmm.
The top eight lists, the top list in particular was one that I've seen labeled it again and again and again and again. It's basically 7 flying hive tyrants, or flyrants as they're known, and then a bunch of spore mines to make it legal, and a handful of ripper swarms as well. So is it within the fluff of Games Workshop's universe for Warhammer 40,000? Absolutely not. It makes zero sense from a narrative perspective, from a hobby perspective.
But Adepticon isn't a narrative event.
Exactly. It's a tournament. A tournament's... If you take a hobby narrative-themed army to a hyper-competitive event, whether it's LVO, Adepticon, Nova, ETC, the UK GT Heats, any of the Australian Masters events, that's you handicapping yourself. You have to accept the fact that if you haven't taken the most powerful combination of units and rules that you're comfortable playing, then that's your own handicap.
And that's fine if your intention is to go along, play 2 days worth of games, have a great time and see what you can do with your army. But knowing that chances are there are going to be stronger armies in the room, and you've made a choice to take an army that's not as strong as it perhaps could be.
Yeah, so that doesn't necessarily mean that the players who are taking those 7 flying hive tyrants, the other list that was right at the top end was a combination chaos army that was, it's called the Endless Poxwalker Farm, where they basically just spawn more and more zombies, and it doesn't matter what you're killing, you're giving them more zombies. And it doesn't win by killing you, it wins through essentially closing the board off to you and just scoring all the objectives.
Yeah.
And it can kill things, but it's
mass overrun, really.
Yeah. So is it in theme? It's a zombie horde, and as all the cultists die, more and more zombies turn up, and as they kill you, more and more zombies turn up. I actually reckon
that's quite a pretty cool thing.
But again, it's the way it's constructed with the characters it uses to give all the benefits. They're not necessarily something you'd ever see in the narrative of Games Workshop's Warhammer 40,000 universe. So again, between those pieces, as well as the stratagems which people consider to be overpowered, I think people misconstrue super powerful with win at all costs. I think that's part of the disconnect. Is a list super powerful? Absolutely. Is a player going to a tournament going to take a super powerful list? Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Does that mean they're going to win at all, no matter the cost? Win at all costs or no matter the cost? Mm-hmm. No. Because the cost at this point in time is only time and money.
Yeah.
And money to buy the army and time to prepare it, you know, paint it and practice with it.
And it's a cost of personal choice as well. So people have a choice what army they're going to take. If you're, I know that you don't like the term, but if you're going to take an army based on meta because you want to win and it's not an army you want to play with, then you're forgoing an option of personal choice.
Yeah, and I've only done that 2016 when I built my Necron army for the Australian team event.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not an army that I've ever kind of wanted to build or been sort of drawn to, but I built it, I played it, I actually kind of enjoyed it, and it's now going to be really good in a week's time, apparently, when the new codex comes out. But So I've heard. But it's still an army that could be labelled, if I turn up to a tournament a couple of weeks from now with it, it could very easily be labelled win at all costs because I've taken an army that is powerful.
Yeah.
And it's not winning at all costs. It's the costs are time and money to prepare it and buy it and paint it. And that's a personal choice. No, I mean, if you're in this hobby and you're playing with orcs and you want to be winning tournaments, then why didn't you buy Tyranids? If that's where you need to be to win, if your goal is to win a tournament, why are you not taking the best list you can? Why are you not going down that road of exploring the most powerful options? And ultimately, that's your choice to go, no, you know what? I like the models for the orcs. I like the way they play. I like their stories. And it's the same reason why I'm building Tau at the moment. I've finally got a way of fielding a bunch of battle suits and all the like the Gundam-style mecha. Is it going to be the best army? No.
I know, you waited until the edition where Tau wasn't the most powerful army and then thought, oh, I know.
It's because I couldn't ever run it the way I wanted to run it. So it's good because now I get to build an army that I want to build.
Plus, imagine your reputation. I mean, it's bad enough because you play Eldar. So I'm constantly hearing about all Eldar players are win at all costs. And in 7th edition, Tau had that similar reputation. So could you imagine if you played Eldar, Tau that was that powerful, and Necrons? Oh my God.
It's all right. The Dark Eldar Codex got announced yesterday, so who knows what that's going to bring, and that's kind of my niche, that army. Mm. But going back to the point, I suppose...
It's where's the line in the sand, really, yeah. Isn't it? So when you look at the different costs that there are, then there's the cost of actual financial cost. How much is it going to cost you to buy an army that is powerful army? There's the time. So if it's the cost of time that you have to build an army, to prepare an army, to practice with that army and get to a point where you are experienced enough to play well regardless of what's on the table in front of you. Practicing, nobody's ever accused anyone who practices a lot of being win at all cost, but one of the costs that they're giving up is time. We already talked about the cost of personal choice, but where it comes to that line for me at win at all costs is around that whole moral compass. So when are you prepared to compromise your ethics and your reputation by cheating? When are you prepared to take that step of going, you know what, that cost is fine to me to go as far as cheating in order to win this game? And for me, that's what win at all costs means.
Yeah, absolutely. And certainly at a tournament, that is essentially, in my mind, the definition of win at all costs. So, you know, what am I prepared to do to win this game?
Mm.
And now if I've turned up with an army list I've written that I've built and painted, all of those costs are covered. At this point, there are still things that I can give up that would let me win games.
And there are still things that you're not prepared to do.
Yeah, exactly.
And that's what stops you being a win-at-all-cost player.
Yeah.
Because you wouldn't go in with weighted dice or...
Or fudging rules or measurements and those sorts. I mean, we were throwing them around earlier. So, you know, picking up dice, you roll them and then don't let your opponent check them.
I got 12 sixes, honestly.
Yeah. Or, you know, there's a difference, though, between fast dice rolling and sneaky dice rolling. I mean, dice manipulation of any kind is always going to be questionable behavior.
Yeah.
And certainly, like, weighted dice and rigged dice are something that, thankfully, seems to happen very rarely within the community at large.
Hmm.
But it is in that bracket of, you know, manipulating the results to your advantage. And at that point, you are giving up your own reputation and morals and to win a game. And it is just a game. You know, rubber rulers or ruler surfing, as I've heard them called before, where, and I'm trying to avoid the faux pas that Emma made on the last episode. go back and listen to episode 13 if you want to have a laugh.
Every inches.
Inches or miles. Yeah, so basically fudging the measurements that you're making, whether it's moving too far or telling your opponent they are moving too far.
Mm.
Those sorts of things are obviously questionable behavior within what should be a fair and equitable arrangement. So they certainly fall into the whack category.
Yeah. And things like deliberate slow play fall into that as well.
Yeah, and that's certainly something that's come to the community's attention as the 2018 tournaments have sort of come around with obviously all the new additions and the new codexes and all the complexities that's brought. So, you know, if you take half an hour to deploy an army and then take an hour for your first turn in a 2.5 hour game, when you've only got, you know, 30, 40, 50 models, then there's something not right going on there.
Yeah, and I think it's different. We ran War Calls last year. Was it 2 weeks, 4 weeks
three,
after 8th edition dropped? And people were slower with their games.
Absolutely.
It wasn't about deliberately trying to manipulate the result. It was, hang on a minute, let me just check this page to find out what the rule is now. Is this still the same? Is this, you know, has anything changed? What do I need to be doing?
I think, interestingly, with slow play, not just deliberate, but slow playing in general, it seems to happen more at the top tables than the bottom, in my observation. And it's partly because I think the higher-end players tend to know what other options they have and often weigh those more with more clarity and with more, I suppose, thought.
That's different to deliberate slow play,
yeah,
though.
Oh, absolutely.
That's considered play.
Yeah, exactly.
Rather than slow play.
Yeah, I mean,
that's working through the different strategies, working through your different options that you've got available to you and making a considered choice rather than, I'm considering my choice for an overly long amount of time because that way you're going to be restricted with how long you've got for your turn.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, if you are deliberately manipulating the time that you have so that your opponent is getting less game time than you, then that's deliberate slow play. And it can be very hard to identify. It can be very hard to prove. And I know that plenty of organizers are going down the road of sort of, you know, one warning chess clocks where you start actually timing players to make sure how much time they're taking for those people who are flagged as slow play.
Yeah, and we've discussed this before on
yeah.
the podcast.
I don't know there's a good answer to it just yet, but no. There's a few different ways of getting yourself faster and better at it, and
practice.
That's practice.
Yep.
So
that few different ways actually comes down to one, practice.
Well, look, timing yourself while you practice.
Yeah.
But look, yeah, deliberate slow play certainly falls under the win at all costs because, again, you're giving up an ethical position of a fair game to force your opponent into a position where they have a lower chance of winning by you manipulating the situation.
Yeah.
And ultimately, all of these are just dirty, rotten tricks, really.
Mm. Yeah, that's it. Which comes down to that whole ethical dilemma.
Yeah.
What kind of player do you want to be?
It's a funny one because as soon as you go down that road of blatant cheating, the label of win at all costs actually disappears.
And it just becomes
just,
a cheater.
You're a cheater.
Yeah.
And I think that's the hardest disconnect there where people are using the win at all costs label for people who are playing really competitively with really strong lists and reading the rules as literally, like, as written. So that when a query comes up, it's like, well, this is what the rule says. This is the way it works. We've got no FAQs. We've got no nothing. That's the way it works. When there might be a clear intent. The best one I can think of at the top of my head is the Sky Shield landing pad from Warhammer 40,000. So like all fortifications and all models for that matter, you can't put one model on top of another.
Mm-hmm.
like a, it'd be like putting a space marine on top of a tank. You can't do it. The rules don't allow you to put one model on top of another. In the past, all the fortifications had battlements, or you could put models on top of fortifications in 7th edition and prior. In 8th edition, what they've done is take those rules away, and now you essentially get in the fortification much like a vehicle. They're essentially static vehicles. The problem with the Sky Shield is that it doesn't have a transport capacity, so you can't actually get in it. You can't get on it because the core rules don't let you, but it's implied in its special rules that any model on top of the Sky Shield gets these benefits.
Yeah.
So there's definitely an implication that you should be able to get on top of it. But it never goes in to tell you
what
models can get on it, how you get on it, how you get off of it, what, you know, all those other sort of nitty-gritty things that come about. Now, if you turned up with a Sky Shield landing pad and a player wanted to be technical and, you know, really read it as written, they could turn around and go, you can't get on it.
Yeah.
I don't know a single person I've ever met would actually try and pull that line. I can't think of anyone I've ever played at any tournament ever that would try that, because there's a very clear intent in the rules.
Mm-hmm.
But I could also see someone at a tournament going, nah, you can't get on it. And then if the judge reads it as a rules as written interpretation, then you might be stuck.
Yep.
And at that point, that'd leave a sour to me. And at that point, I could see them going, well, now you're trying to win at all costs because there's a clear intent with that rule. The trick is, though, that, again, you have to kind of question, is there a moral implication in going down that hyper-linear ruling where you go, no, that's actually what it says. So,
yeah, I find that tricky because I think different people have different cognitive pathways, trying to work out how to put this, but different individuals are perhaps unable to see grey.
Yeah.
Certainly some players that I meet, it's black or it's white, it says this. That's not about them winning at all costs, it's just they are physically unable to read it as an intent because the rule says this.
Yeah, I actually had this conversation with around the Sky Shield, which is why I bring it up today, because it's one that I had a couple of days ago. We were discussing the Tower Tide Wall formation, the fortifications. And all of those are these sort of little floating discs that in the past you would actually put models on the table. They would count as being in cover and they would give different benefits.
Mm-hmm.
Now, all of them have a transport capacity. The model hasn't changed, so there is still room to put models on these floating combat points. I've actually got one sat here just now. And it's got little stairs that lead up the ramps and all the rest of it. And when I pointed out to this particular player that, it doesn't matter. Like, they've got a photo in the worst part, the reason this all came about is there's a photo in the codex of a battlesuit commander on top of one of these gun rigs. The battlesuit commander doesn't have the infantry keyword, so he can't embark on it.
And it looked really cool in the photo.
And it's a photo from the last codex.
Yeah.
So people are going, well, does that mean I can embark in it and put models on top of it? And so having that conversation, I went, well, you can't for the Sky Shield. There's no rule that lets you put anyone on anything, technically. And he's gone, well, why would you give an exception to the Sky Shield? And I said, well, there's a very clear intent there for the way the Sky Shield is meant to work. And he said, well, now you're making an arbitrary choice, because why should it be good for one and not the other? And when you actually go back and look at all the fortifications, like we've got a Fortress of Redemption sat here beside me with a whole bunch of battlements and ramparts and things that you can put models on. But in the rules, you can't. In 7th, you could.
Yeah.
But in 8th, you can't. So now we're having to apply a level of intent to a model to make it work. And as soon as you do that, well, hang on a minute. Why does it get a free pass, but these other ones that have the same space don't?
Yeah.
So he was of the opinion that, no, everything should be allowed to be on top of things. And like I said to him, playing devil's advocate, you can't. The rules don't allow you to do that. But I, as a TO, would allow the Sky Shield that luxury because of its other rules.
Yeah.
Now, if you turned up with a Tide Wall and we had that conversation and I said, no, you can't put models on top of it because the rules don't let you, I'm not being win at all costs. As far as I can see it, I'm playing by the rules. I don't see that as me being a jerk. You can still embark on it. You just can't put a broadside on top of it. Or a Riptide or any of those other sort of big robots and try and get the benefit. And if anything, I could argue the reverse and say, well, you're trying to find...
You're trying to find a loophole.
A loophole that allows you to get the benefits of these things with a model that clearly isn't able to. Which, and at that point, who's right?
Yeah, and that's one of the things that we've talked about in the past as well, is that when people do actually try to use those loopholes to the best of their advantage, and it starts to get a little bit close to the line.
But again, it's intent. And if you morally and ethically know, like, that you are stretching the boundaries of what is going to be acceptable, if you know, how can I put it? If you turn
it's
up,
making a decision.
If you turn up to a table with a pre-planned argument of why you're right,
chances are you're not. Yeah.
I think if you're having to stretch the boundaries that far to try and get get it over the line, and you're ready for that argument with some, because you know your opponent's going to go, "Nah, man, what are you talking about? Let me get the referee." That to me says you've already crossed that line of intent.
Could also say that you know your army incredibly well, and you can, I mean, you can argue anything.
Yeah, you can. Of course
you
can.
No, I mean you personally could argue anything at the drop of a hat.
Oh, with this game, absolutely.
So if somebody came up and said, "Hey, buddy, you're stretching that," you're going to have that pre-planned. It's not necessarily pre-planned. It's just you know it well enough that you could argue why you should be allowed to do that. Or why your opponent shouldn't be allowed to do that. That doesn't necessarily mean you've made that.
No, but I've certainly seen.
I know what you're talking about.
And hopefully you listening to this actually understand what I'm talking about, because
rather than just listening to us bicker.
But I mean I think the grey areas and the rules are the ones that always cause the most consternation among players.
That's it. When it comes to things like loaded dice or using a measure that you know is inaccurate, there's a really clear line that's actually cheating.
Yeah.
It's the things that are slightly more grey where it gets a little bit tricky to define what's actually playing a strong tournament list and what is actually that line and making an ethical decision to do the wrong thing in order to win.
And I know plenty of people will argue that Games Workshop's rules writers are partly to blame for those ambiguities in the rules.
Most definitely. But honestly, you cannot physically come up with every single possible outcome that could happen. Like,
speaking as someone who's playtested for another company's game, we ripped the hell out of this particular beta test set of rules that we were given. We found a bunch of problems, gave them back to the developers. They gave us back revised rules. It went back and forth for about 3 months.
Yeah.
And then it was published. And it was like, oh, wow, awesome. And within days, less than days, there were people going, how does this work? Why does this not work? What's this? What's that? Because as soon as you put it out in the public, when there's thousands of people looking at it, you always find more stuff that the 10 or 20 or 50 or 100 of you who all understand the intent, because the developer has told you what the intent is.
Or because you've got pre-existing knowledge.
Yeah, that's what I mean, is that there's no question. It doesn't need to be clarified because you already know the answer. Yeah. And I think there's no way. It's like car recalls. You don't know it's going to fall apart until you put it on the road in the hands of hundreds and hundreds of people, and then something goes wrong.
And then you find out that all the cars need to be recalled because the airbags aren't working, and their best advice is don't crash.
Yeah, class action lawsuits and all sorts incoming. But, you know, I think the rules are very much in that vein, is that the grey areas in the rules in Games Workshop have gotten much better at fixing a lot of them. There's a great one at the moment, and again, as a TO, I know how I'd rule this. The new Nullmore, I can never say the word right. It's basically a tree. It's a plague tree.
Mm-hmm.
In 40K, you can take it as a fortification. Now, when you do that, it's part of your army, and any model in your army can be made your warlord. So you can make this tree your warlord.
Mm-hmm.
As soon as you deploy the tree, it stops being a model in your army and becomes a piece of terrain. So you can't blow it up because it has no stat line. It's a piece of terrain.
Mm-hmm.
You can never give up Slay the Warlord because your warlord is now on the table but can't actually be attacked or targeted.
Yep.
You can't give up a kill point because it's a piece of terrain. So, and the same goes for things like the Aegis defense line. For most of the armies can access that. If you take just the defense line, just the wall... Alex had one in his Necron army in the last game.
Mm-hmm.
If he chosen to make that his warlord, that's that. I can't claim the Warlord kill. I can't get any points from destroying it because I can't destroy it.
Yeah.
Is the intent of Games Workshop to allow you to make a wall the Warlord of your army? Probably not.
Chances are it's not.
Is the intent of Games Workshop to allow you to make a plague-ridden tree your Warlord? Probably no.
Yeah.
So, but again, there's people out there who I've seen online arguing rules as written.
Yeah.
They can do that. As a TO, and this is only my opinion, it's not Emma's, but in my opinion, hell no. If you tried that at a tournament that I was running, I'd be saying no. It has to be an active model in your army. Or I'd almost be inclined to say, sure, you can do that. As soon as it's deployed, you give up Slay the Warlord because your Warlord is no longer part of your army. Which would you like to do? And I'd also give up First Blood at that point because it's no longer part of your army.
Yeah.
And I'd give up a kill point because it's no longer part of your army. How would you like to handle that? Now, are any of those three things in the rules? No. But the best part about being a TO is it's your game, it's your tournament.
Yeah, we do also talk about the fact that we do run events to be as close to rules as written as possible.
Yeah.
But this is something that we don't think it's the intention of the way that the game was written, and we want the game to be played as intended.
Yeah, and I mean, I've sent that off to Games Workshop's Q&A group to go, hey, this, as far as, it feels weird, but I've kind of gone, well, as far as I'm concerned, I know how this should work, but...
You're one person.
You probably need to put this in the FAQs.
Yeah, and we've got 120 players coming in less than a month, and if anybody does want a tree as their warlord for WATC, it's not going to fly.
No. So I think all those rules ambiguities, if you are playing a friendly game and you tried that and your opponent called you a win-at-all-cost jerk, I could actually see the point of them saying that because you've found a very clear loophole.
And you're exploiting it.
And you're exploiting it. Because you are essentially giving up a small ethical component of yourself to go, you know what, I'm okay with doing this.
And where, I guess, where's the line between making the most of a loophole
and outright exploiting it?
Exploiting a loophole, that's right.
Yeah.
And, yeah, I mean, we were talking about...
Oh, there's another good one in the Tau book.
Go for it.
The Cold Star Commander has a burst cannon and a missile pod. And the way it's written says you may exchange one or both of these for up to two weapons and or support systems. And the way it's worded means that if you just take him with those two guns, he can put two more guns on for four guns. But the way they've written it means that if I choose to swap the burst cannon out, because it says swap the burst cannon and or the missile pod for up to two weapons and or support systems, means that I could technically swap the burst cannon for two guns, the missile pod for two guns, and then still put two more guns on him from the rest of his ruling to give him six guns.
Beautiful.
Clearly not the intent when the when all the other commanders, including him, if you just add weapons to him, goes up to four slots.
I think there's a lot more... I'd have a lot more leniency towards considering something where a model comes with too many guns towards considering a tree as a warlord.
Yeah, that's true. But yeah, so there's lots of those little weird wording things that if someone turns up to a tournament with a Cold Star with six burst cannons on it, then they could easily have an argument technically of claiming it's okay.
We just to clarify with my last... comment, we don't think that that's okay.
No.
So,
but there's all those sorts of things that I suppose could have you labelled as winning at all costs because you are finding a weird bit of wording and being willing to do what is not intended with that wording.
And we had a discussion beforehand about the Australian cricket team at the moment because they're obviously very publicly going through an issue about winning at all costs.
For any Australian, for any American, sorry, listeners, you probably have no idea what we're talking about, but for anyone...
Cricket's kind of like baseball, but it's got a flatter bat and you put it on the floor instead of your shoulder. Someone chucks a ball, someone tries to hit it.
I apologise to all our UK and Australian listeners.
Oh, look.
You've upset a lot of them just by those comments.
It's very similar. Very, very different, but that's probably the... Well, easiest way I can explain.
One of the headlines we saw in today's Australian newspaper was literally, how does the Australian cricket team go to win at all costs? And it's to do with ball tampering and how they have literally cheated on the pitch and been caught on camera doing it.
Yeah.
And then had the leadership team, as they call it, admit to ball tampering and admit to doing something that's against the rules of the game.
Yeah, a couple of years ago, a similar thing happened with the Australian cricket team. In one of the bowlers had dirt in his pocket, and he was putting his hand in his pocket, getting dirt and using it to rub on the ball to have better grip, which from the article that I read, and clearly I have no actual knowledge of it, was around, it was a hot day, he was sweaty, he was trying to have better grip on the ball, which is not okay and not allowed, but is different to actually taking something...
A precondition of malice.
Yeah.
Yeah, the team knowingly, or at least the leadership component of the team, knowingly decided that this was a way of gaining an advantage in the game and then set about doing it. It's a precondition, a predisposition.
Mm.
So, yeah, look, I think the term whack and whatnot gets thrown around way too liberally on and off the table.
I know for you, met is a term that you really don't like. And for me, whack is my, that's my kind of catchphrase that just makes me cringe.
It used to be labelled as beardy or cheesy was another one. And those two terms are kind of interchangeable, but whack seems to have overtaken those.
I did quite like that one of our players bought a cheese board with him to Masters at
the
last event.
He admitted his list was super powerful. But even those sorts of things, again, I think it comes down to a disconnect between what people perceive as narrative and what should be as in an army compared to what a tournament army actually will look like in the modern game. So, look, I mean, I don't think we've actually got a resolution to whack or anything like that. But
yeah, we do. Don't cheat.
Well, yeah. That's okay. Fair enough.
For me, it's that simple, you know. Don't compromise your ethics. Don't compromise your reputation. And actually represent, be a positive representation of the game that you know and love.
There you go. That was actually more succinct than I was expecting.
I can babble on if you want,
no,
but really
fine.
For me, that's what it comes down to.
Look, why don't we put it out there to anyone listening to this? What do you think whack means? What does whack mean to you? Do you agree with us? Do you disagree with us? Why? We'd really love to hear any feedback. You can put it as a comment below this episode on the website. You can send us a comment. You can post it on Facebook.
Feel free not to completely blow up at me because I don't know how to describe cricket. Cause,
But no, look, I think it's an interesting topic of conversation, and I think it's one that we're going to see a lot of people have differing opinions on. Mm. Certainly in my mind, and that's probably the one part of this we 100% agreed on, was win at all costs is literally winning at the cost of anything and everything required. It was with no exceptions. It was...
You are prepared to do anything and everything to get that win.
Yeah. Optimus Prime quotes it in the original Transformers movie, to defeat Megatron no matter the cost. And then he goes and sacrifices himself and dies doing it. So,
oh, but that's lovely.
Oh, that was
sort of.
That was 8-year-old Mike's heartbreak when Optimus Prime died to Megatron. Spoilers, but
just in case you haven't seen
30 years old, yeah,
30-something years.
But you know, he did what he had to, no matter the cost. Well, this is kind of in the same vein.
Okay.
So, with that in mind, we'll be back in just a second to wrap up the episode.
Megatron must be stopped, no matter the cost.
Is another episode done and dusted.
Yeah.
And I'm sure that listening back to this as I edit it and post it, it's going to be an interesting one to listen back to. And there's a bit of rambling and certainly a bit of back and forth in
That's
disagreement.
That's so unlike us. We're normally so succinct and to the point.
But hopefully it's given you something to think about when you next go to use the W word in a forum post or in a Facebook page or just in person.
Yeah, and like you said before, if people have different ideas around what that means to them or something that we didn't cover here, we really would love to hear about it.
We can always do whack take two, can't we?
It depends on how much rambling there is on whack take one.
But yeah, look, we'd certainly like to hear your thoughts and see what you think, whether you agree with us, whether you disagree with us, and you know, maybe we can even have someone on to chat live with us in the future episodes as well. So, Until then, though, guys, you can keep up to date with everything we're doing on the Facebook page. We post a lot of stuff to Twitter as well. The YouTube channel, the next battle report has gone up now, by the time you're listening to this at least. So you can check that out with my Eon and Eldar versus Alex's Necrons just before. It is a Necron Index game, so it is just before the Codex release. You can also find us every second Wednesday on the Facebook page doing a live stream where we do Ask Us Anything Q&A stuff. We also talk about upcoming events and how we rule different things, and we answer questions about events as well. So that's every alternate Wednesday to the podcast. Mm-hmm. So if you want to check us out and come and ask us questions,
we're literally everywhere.
Well, we try and be.
Yep, Facebook every second Wednesday, this podcast on the alternate Wednesdays, every second Friday for the...
it's a little bit late at the moment.
For the battle report, we will be back on track for the next one. So, yeah, like, subscribe. What do you do for Twitter?
Follow. I think it's follow.
Share, retweet, all that stuff.
All the buzzwords.
Yeah.
Yeah, look, until the next episode, though, be sure to check us out everywhere. And we hope you enjoyed this episode. And we look forward to speaking to you again in 2 weeks' time.
Thanks for listening, guys.
It don't matter if you win by an inch or a mile. Winning's winning.
Listening to the Objective Secured podcast. If you'd like to get in touch, you can visit our website, objectivesecured.com.au. You can find us on Facebook.com/objectivesecured, or you can email us, obsec@optusnet.com.au. Thanks for listening.